Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 33, the Rasa Dance, Text 33. Kim atulakila sattvanam turyan mrtya divaukasam Ishitas Cheshitavyanam Kushala Kushalavaya Kimmatakila Sattvanam Turyan Martya Duvalkasam Ishitas Cheshitavyanam Kushala Kushalavaya
Kushalavaya
Kimmatakila Sattvanam Turyan Matya Divaukasam Ishitas Cheshitavyanam Kushala Kushalanvaya. Ishitas Cheshitavyanam Kushalan Kushalanvaya. Mothers? Kim Utakila Sattvanam Turyan Marcha Devaukisam Kim Uta. What to speak then? Akila of all. Sadvanam. Created beings. Turyak. Animals. Matya. Humans. Diva Okasam. the inhabitants of heaven, Ishitu, for the controller, Cha, and Ishitavyanam,
of those who are controlled,
Kushala, with piety, Akushala, impiety, Anavaya, causal or casual connection. Translation and purport by the followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. How then could the Lord of all created beings, animals, men, and demigods, have any connection with the piety and impiety that affect His subject creatures? Translation responsively. How then could the Lord of all created beings,
animals, men, and demigods,
have any connection with the piety and impiety that affect His subject creatures? Purport. As explained in text 32, even great personalities empowered by the Lord are freed from the laws of karma. What then to speak of the Lord Himself? After all, the law of karma is created and is an expression of His omnipotent will. Therefore, His activities, which He performs out of His own pure goodness, are never subject to criticism by ordinary living beings. Om Jnana Tmanandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guru Venamaha Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasari Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we're continuing on this section in which a question has been answered by Sukadev Goswami. The question is, why has Krishna done this? Why has He apparently transgressed the dharma of this world by dancing with young married ladies in the forest when He is unmarried and He's not their wife? And why has He done it with so many? So this question, this doubt has been raised by Parikshit Maharaj in order to dispel the doubt in both the audience that is present where the Srimad Bhagavatam has been spoken, and also in the future, any doubts that might arise. So the answer that's basically been given in these verses is that Krishna is the Lord. That's what we need to understand. This is an ordinary scenario. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is active here. This is not an ordinary event of the mundane world. Krishna's position is that He is the Lord of all existence. For Him there is no transgression because He is the owner of all energy, of which the gopis are an expression. They actually belong to Him, just as everything and everyone does belong to Him. So there's no transgression for Him to enjoy His energies. He is above and beyond the ordinary moral codes that dictate how we should behave in the world. He is the Lord. One time, Prabhupada was speaking to an Indian gentleman in India. And this Indian gentleman was a Christian. And like
most converts to Christianity in India, he was converted by hearing Krishna blasphemed. And he was asking Prabhupada, he's saying, how can you worship a concept of God who is an adulterer, dancing with other men's wives in the dead of night? How can you do that? And in a very sort of envious, critical way, he was saying like that. And Prabhupada just said, no, you are the adulterer. All women belong to Krishna, just as everything else. So for him there is no transgression. And understanding the scenario, all difficulties are resolved. And that's actually the nature of becoming Krishna conscious. You know, sometimes we're out on the street and we say to people doing book distribution or whatever, we say, have you heard of stress? And of course everybody says yes, yes, because this is the age of stress. And then you say, well, these books can free you from stress. And that's not actually just a clever sales line, you know, just to appeal to a common ailment of the day and age. But it's actually reality. Because by becoming Krishna conscious, one becomes in harmony with the existential flow of things. Conceivably, you could actually go up to somebody and say, what's your problem, mate? And whatever he says, you could say, okay, we've got the solution. It doesn't matter what he says, because Krishna consciousness actually solves all problems. How is that? By understanding the situation of life from the perspective of the Supreme Person, whose will is reality, we become peaceful because we understand the situation of things, we understand our position, and we act accordingly. It's explained in the end of the fifth chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, Vaktaram Yagyatapasam Sava Loka Maheshwaram Suridam Sava Bhutanam Gyatvamam Shantam Richate. That one can be freed from all the pangs and material miseries. Problem solved. Become peaceful. Shantam, achieve peace. How? By understanding Krishna and his position. Understanding that he is the ultimate enjoyer of all activities, sacrifices, yajna, and tapas, austerities. I mean, basically, as devotees, the only reason we do anything is to give pleasure to Krishna. In the final analysis, that's why we chant our rounds, we're sitting there. It's a meditation, of course, you can focus your mind, elevate your awareness, but really the final conclusion is that we're just doing it because Prabhupada asked us to, Krishna wants us to, our spiritual master asked us to. He is the ultimate enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities. That is his position. He is the Supreme Lord, the Maha-Ishvara of all planets and demigods. There are many different levels of controllers, but Krishna is the Supreme. So understanding these things, actually becoming Krishna conscious, solves all problems. Krishna is the Surit, the dearmost companion within the heart. We try and have many relationships in this world with others, but these relationships, if they're on the bodily platform, they're very imperfect and very unsatisfying, because you're dealing through your own misconcept of yourself, and then you're also dealing with another person who's got a misconcept with themselves, and both have. So there's lots of clouds in between actually your spirit soul and their spirit soul in terms of misconception and sensory imperfection. And then plus, you're both self-motivated in the material concept. So there's a very dissatisfying relationship there. But Krishna, he knows us so intimately. He is within our heart. He knows our, this is explained in the 13th chapter of the Gita, that we know our field of experience, our body, our mind, and our sensory field. We know that. We're the knower of the field. But Krishna, he knows all fields perfectly. We don't even know our own field perfectly, but he knows it perfectly. And what to speak of our field, he knows all the fields. He knows the entire extent of his energy. And he's going through everything we go through. He's also giving us the our various... he's giving us our experience, actually, according to our desire and karma. He explains that from me comes all knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. Our very concept of who we are is coming from him. So he's actually the dearmost friend. Like two birds sitting within a tree, he's going with us through our sojourn in the material world as our companion. So becoming a devotee means to become aware of the reality of Krishna. And that doesn't mean just to have some sort of, you know, concept tucked away in the brain, but eventually when we look at the world, when we look at existence, we are aware that Krishna is there. We understand how the entire world, the entire universe exists within his energy. We understand how he's all-pervading in his awareness, with that throughout his entire energy. We understand how he's our companion within the heart. And we also understand how he has his own form, his own pastimes. So knowing all this, the devotee becomes, he attains, again, Satchidananda, the original state of a living entity. Sat, eternal. He understands, I am not this body, I existed before this body, I shall exist in the future. I have no birth, I have no death. I am pure consciousness. The field of experience may shift and change, but I am an eternal living entity. Therefore, the anxiety of birth and death, of change, of gain and loss, does not affect the devotee. Chit, knowledge. The devotee sees things as they are. He understands the nature of things. You know, many these days, New Age religions and philosophies, they, like, for example, Taoism and so forth, they talk about the nature of things, the way, that there is a cosmic flow. And enlightenment means to align with that cosmic flow and achieve harmony. And therefore, all activities are, in all activities you achieve bounty and harmony, peace and harmony. Devotee also understands everything from Krishna's point of view, because Krishna, we might have some concept about something, like fire should not be hot. That might be our will, but that's not Krishna's design for things. Therefore, we might try and have our, we might desire that our will be carried out and fire become cool, but it's not going to happen. Therefore, not understanding that our will is not supreme, that our will is very minute, we'll become frustrated when our desire is not fulfilled and we'll suffer because we don't understand the nature of things. But the devotee, he understands that Krishna's will is the he's the engineer of everything. He's given everything its dharma, its nature, and that is set forth in the Vedic literatures. So if we live and act following Krishna's guidelines of what is the nature of things and how to act appropriately, interact appropriately with the world, we become peaceful. We see things as they are, chit. And then finally the devotee attains ananda, meaning bliss. And bliss is obtained because of the ecstatic devotional exchange between the individual living entity and Krishna. Due to
being aware of this relationship and then acting in a service capacity. There's many different relationships you can have with Krishna. You can be a servant, or you can just be an admirer, Shantaras. You can be a servant, Dasya. You can become a friend, Sakya. You can become a parent, Vatsalya. Or you can become a lover, Madhurya. Different rasas. And these rasas, this ecstatic emotional exchange between the devotee and the Lord, produces ananda, bliss. Now Krishna is expert in relationship. In fact, nowhere is that better illustrated than in the rasa dance. Krishna behaved with the gopis in such a way to create an intense longing within them, and he increased that to fever pitch by disappearing and so forth. His interactions were so wonderful that they increased the ecstasy of the exchange to fever pitch. So Krishna is expert in relationship. Whatever relationship we have with him, if we are sincere, that relationship will grow and be ever fresh, be an ever fresh source of bliss for us as we develop in our Krishna consciousness. So the devotee is peaceful and free of all problems, and also is enjoying. But then what of the conditioned souls? They are frustrated. They're trying to enjoy, but they're becoming frustrated. They're trying to enforce their will, project their will onto the material energy in the hope that it will bend to their will. But then when it does not, they become frustrated. And due to being conditioned by various modes of nature, they have all sorts of existential misconceptions. That's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, that according to the modes you become conditioned by, you develop a certain type of existential concept, what you think is real, what you think is valuable. You develop certain attractions, certain aversions, based on your sensory apparatus. In the mode of goodness, you value certain things. In the mode of passion, you value different things. And in the mode of ignorance, you just value foolish things. So the living entities, they're caught in the material energy with a very great misconception about what is the goal of life, how to be happy. And to try and be happy, they speculate. Maybe we'll try this, maybe we'll try that. But not able to ascertain the actual nature of things and the ultimate goal of life, they become frustrated. So the devotees, they see this, that actually the conditioned souls, they are engaged in asat, illusion. They're speculating, they're doing so many activities, but it's all a big waste of time, just moving the material energy around in various ways. Trying to enjoy it's going to be frustrated because that's not their constitutional position. Therefore, there's a nice verse in chapter 2 where Krishna says, Yada te moha kalinam buddhya vyaktir rishyate tada gantasya nirvedam shrotavyasya sutasya cha. That when your intelligence, Arjuna, has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, existential misconception, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. You'll see the entire gamut of activity carried out by the conditioned souls, and you'll just put one big stamp on it, Maya. You'll be disinterested, indifferent. And there's a nice, in the purport, Prabhupada has a nice reference here about Madhavendra Puri. He was so indifferent to even material duty, pious dharmic duty, he became indifferent to it. This is what he says. O my prayers, three times a day, all glories unto you. O bathing, I offer my obeisances unto you. O demigods, O forefathers, please excuse me,
for my inability to offer my respects. Now, wherever I sit, I can remember the great descendant of the Yadu dynasty, Krishna, and the enemy of Kamsa, and thereby I can free myself from all sinful bondage. I think this is sufficient for me. So the devotee, in their Krishna consciousness, peaceful, satisfied, no interest in the material energy. Yet still, we see that the devotees preach, nevertheless. And what we see is this is the lifestyle of the Lord and the devotees. There's only real two things they do. There's they taste the nectar of devotional exchange, and they reach out to those caught in illusion and Maya. That's explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, "Prakriti Puritchanaya Sarunam Vanashayatra Duskritam Vanashay Dharma Samstapana Taya Sambhavam Yuge Yuge." That I appear for two purposes: to police this material world, when the miscreants, those who are miscreations, something's gone wrong in their programming, when they are out of line, I police. I annihilate the miscreants and re-establish the principles of religion. And I also come to deliver the devotees, or to give pleasure to the devotees, to attract them. This is his twofold program. And the devotees also have this program. You see, Lord Chaitanya, who appeared as a devotee, he came, he had this program too. It's explained that there's two reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance. One, he was fascinated. He was so curious to know what was the nature of Radharani's love for him. What was she tasting? He couldn't understand what that taste was like. And he realized, actually, I will never be able to understand what that's like unless I take on her mood. And secondly, he came to bring the Sankirtan movement, the Yugadam. So then he combined. He took on the mood of Srimati Radharani and her effulgent golden colour and appeared. And this was his mission: two things, to both taste and preach. So this is also the devotee's program. We see Srila Prabhupada, he did that, he was tasting. Every day he'd study Srimad Bhagavatam, translate it, he'd give classes, and then he'd chant his rounds and relish his devotional consciousness, and then he'd preach. And this is our program also, should be. My Gurudev puts it in a nice way. He says that there should be simultaneous transformation and distribution. Transformation means to perform sadhana and devotional practice according to dharma. And, you know, act in the world in such a way that it transforms, we become purified, and then we can taste. Because in the conditioned state, we cannot taste fully, we might have some taste. And gradually as we transform and become more and more purified, then we can taste more fully the nectar. And then the other aspect is to distribute. That we reach out to others. And that's what we see in this verse actually as well. The Pariksit Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami, they're relishing Krishna's pastimes. And Krishna is also relishing them. He's doing his rasa dance, as Prabhu explained the other day. He doesn't even think about, you know, the consequences in the minds of those who don't understand. He's just enjoying. That's his position. And the rasa dance is going to go on whether we understand it or not, whether we agree with it or not, because that's Krishna's program. He's here to enjoy, to taste devotional exchange between himself and his devotees. But, out of mercy, they take the time to explain it. They say, Pariksit, on behalf of all those who might have this doubt, he asks, So how are we supposed to understand this? What is the correct way to understand this? That's mercy. So there you go. You see that they're tasting and they're also preaching. And the motivation for the devotee to preach is causeless. They have no desire for fame, distinction, adoration. They're not trying to achieve anything for themselves. Just out of the ocean of kindness in their hearts, they want to help those who are suffering in ignorance and to raise them out of their ignorance so they can see things as they are and taste devotion. And in order to do that, they have to get the right understanding of things. So for us, transformation means some basic things. You know, we chant our rounds. We should try and do that as nicely as possible. I was at one initiation in Sydney some years ago. Indradyumna Maharaj was initiating some disciples, and he said there's three P's to chanting: posture, pronunciation, and prayerfulness. That one should sit or move in such a way that we're not distracted by so many other things. That will give you physical alertness. Pronunciation, if you pronounce very carefully, that will give you mental alertness. And finally, we have to work on the mood as well. We have to gradually, that takes time, because chanting starts with doing it, and we should try and do it nicely. My Gurudev says that we should try not to do other things while chanting, try and chant all around at once. That will take care of the gross. Then if we pronounce carefully, gradually, and try and be attentive, gradually we'll develop mental alertness as well. And then finally we have to develop the mood. Because chanting Hare Krishna is the it's a very complete way, very pure way of developing Krishna consciousness, because you're actually just trying to focus directly on the form of the holy name, which is none different from Krishna, and with the right mood, you're trying to develop devotion for that holy name as well. The holy name is non different from Krishna. So if we become fully attentive to the holy name and have a mood of worship and devotion, then we're worshipping Krishna directly. It's the means and the end. Those who are very advanced in their chanting, they relish that chanting. And they experience wonderful exchange with Krishna through the chanting. And also we should study regularly and do nice service. That's our program for transformation. But then distribution, that also must go on. And distribution ultimately means to deliver the nectar. Because there's no doubt that Krishna consciousness is nectar. But the thing is, the conditioned souls, due to their being very conditioned by you know, fads and fashions and misconcepts, they don't understand what is there on offer. These days especially, there is great adversity to organized religion. People think they're just a bunch of rules and regulations, soul-crushing rules to keep you down, to keep you under the control of the monks and the priests. And they're archaic, they're out of date. And that's how they perceive Krishna consciousness often. And they've got all these ideas about what is the actual goal of life, etc. So the devotees, we actually have something very special. We have the most special thing, devotion to Krishna. Or the process, at least, to get devotion to Krishna and the knowledge. preaching means to deliver that. So there's two things. There's the essence and then there's the package. The essence never changes. Krishna bhakti. That never changes. But the package, that might change. Because you notice, if you go into the shops, packaging, logos, marketing, it's always changing. It's always evolving. According to the way fashion changes and evolves in this world. And often they have, like, Coca-Cola's been around for many, many decades. And they just put it in, well, they don't actually put it even in a new bottle. But some products, they put in a new bottle to make it more attractive to people. So in the same way, devotees, sometimes they need to present Krishna consciousness in such a way that is appealing to the mind. Because that's what's in between, basically, the conditioned soul and the preacher. What's in between is the mind. It's the mind of us, if we're not purified, our mind is also in the way, and their mind is in the way. And their mind has so many, full of so many misconceptions and fears, apprehensions, and also attractions and aversions. So, Devamrita Swami, he always says, we make it easy. And what that means is essentially you present it in such a way that it doesn't clash with their attractions and aversions. It's actually make it attractive for them. That's marketing. Marketing is ultimately the science of finding appeal within the minds of others and capitalizing on that appeal. Finding favor. So preaching is ultimately marketing. It means to appeal, to find the appeal. And like we said, Krishna consciousness, you could conceivably go to somebody and say, what's your problem? And they say, oh, well, I've got this problem, that problem, because everybody's got problems. And you could say, well, Krishna consciousness is the solution. If you know how to present nicely. To do this distribution work, this preaching work, we have to become very thoughtful about how we appear to others. Even simple things, you know, like decor, how we dress, how we behave, how we conduct ourselves, how we relate to one another, how we speak. All these things. To preach means to discriminate. That means to, based on time, place and circumstance, you make a tactful presentation. So, to preach effectively, we need to be aware, think about how we are perceived, what impressions we're creating in the minds of others. Because we create an impression that clashes with their what they're into drastically, their mind will say, okay, go away, you don't want to be here, you don't want to get into this. But if we create something that appeals, then their mind will be attracted, and then the nectar can be delivered gradually. And once they get a taste, then Krishna takes over from within the heart. So ultimately, as preachers, connecting with people, you're not trying to change their minds, because you'll never be able to change a person's mind by argument until you've touched their heart. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So the first thing a devotee does is make that connection. A preacher, they'll touch the heart. They'll show that, I'm on your side, I'm your comrade in this struggle of life. I'm your comrade, I'm here for you. Touch the heart, and then gradually, from that relationship, they exert influence and try and deliver the nectar. And then, just guiding them to making that devotional connection with the super soul through a devotional practice, then the super soul will take over and begin to guide them. And then we just need to continue to facilitate the growth of that bhakti lata, that person's devotional kripa. So these are some interesting points about preaching. I don't think we never need to compromise. That should never be understood. When you think about this essence and package thing, you know, you're putting the nectar in a bottle that's appealing according to the particular time, place and circumstance. We're not compromising, we're emphasizing. For example, one concept is that because doctrine is very unattractive these days, philosophical doctrine, it's very hard to, you know, just preach straight philosophy to people. They often might be attracted. But on the other hand, people are very interested in values. So we can easily emphasize the values of Krishna consciousness. I'm sure many of us, we were initially attracted to Krishna consciousness, not so much by the philosophy, but by the qualities of the devotees and their values. I mean, I didn't even really understand the philosophy for the first couple of years. I mean, I understood some basic things, but not the body, this and that. But I didn't understand what the complete picture of the Gaudiya Vaishnava outlook was. But what I was attracted to was the devotees and their heart, their values. And some pertinent values on people's minds are their environment, what's happening about that. Community, how can we get along, you know, families breaking down, people being so impersonal and cold with one another these days. How can we have nice relationships? How can we connect and really get that satiation of heart through our relationships? People are very interested in yoga and meditation and the values that go with that. People have the idea that yoga and meditation somehow hold some rational but genuine key to enlightenment. People have that feeling about these things. So we can easily present these values and then people become attracted, and gradually they can be indoctrinated. So these are just some ideas. So as we see the sages, the devotees, they are tasting and distributing. So we can also do that. We can taste with great enthusiasm the nectar of Krishna consciousness, the morning program, the devotee association, and our service. And we can distribute with intelligence Krishna consciousness. So thank you so much. Is there any comments or corrections? Prabhuji.
Rishikesh, yes. And even during Rasa, we find that when gopis get fried, that Krishna is mild, then Krishna immediately goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna understands their emotions from being Krishna himself.
Mm-hmm.
So why does he have to come separately in the mood of Radharani to understand the mood of
Radharani? Just put again the question.
Krishna can understand the mood of all other living entities from being Krishna himself.
Mm-hmm.
So why did he have to come separately as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
He wanted to be a devotee. And in the position of Lord, he could not be a devotee. He was the object of love, not the abode of love. So he wanted to take the position of the abode of love in order to understand. And yeah, Krishna had some, he's very curious about the extent of Srimad Radharani's love. It's so powerful, it brings me under her control. And he couldn't understand that. It's a mystery, actually. It's a great mystery. The extent of her love is so great that it would bring him under her control. And he was very curious about that. That's as much as I know. So then my understanding is that in the mood of the Lord, he was not able to fully experience the mood of a devotee. Therefore he took that mood, he gave up his position of being the Lord. Even when Lord Chaitanya, when some devotees would say to him, "Yes, we know you are the Lord, this, that, you know, jai to you," he just put his fingers in his ears and say, "Vishnu, Vishnu!" You know, just say, "No, don't say such abominable things, I'm not the Lord, I'm a devotee." And the devotees knew, they knew, "Yes, we know who you are." But that was his mood, not to he was forgetful of that, his position, and trying to, and relishing a different mood as a devotee.
One more reason about Kabir asking is, at that time position in Bengal was very bad. If a Brahmana got in the shadow of a non-Brahmana, he had to take bath or something. So it was a terrible situation at that time. So Mahaprabhu wanted to spread the...
Yeah, he wanted to get back to the essence. I get caught up on all these rules and regulations. That's what Madhavendra Puri says in this verse, you know, that Prabhupada quotes here, you know. But all these rituals, you know, all glories unto you. All glories to my puja, my this, my that, my bath 3 times a day, great. Anyway. Now, wherever I go, I can chant Hare Krishna and I can remember Krishna, the great descendant of the Yadu dynasty, the enemy of Kamsa. And thereby I can free myself from all sinful bondage, just by that connection. Krishna, you know, for his devotees, he can call off the material energy like that. No problem, liberated. If the devotee has the right attitude, that's ultimately what it means. To get out of jail, all we need to do is reform ourselves. So these other things there, rituals and so forth, they're to bring the living entity of the mode of goodness. It's a gradual process. But once one's attained devotion, these other things, you know, do them or don't do them. It doesn't really matter. The main thing is that you have great attachment to the Lord, great devotion. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, within the assembly of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the audience, obviously there were some great yogis and mystics. And how is it that after, in this point,
good question.
Why,
after hearing 10 cantos of the, or 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam up to this point, do they still have this misconception about Krishna's position? I guess ignorance is very deep. And you see Bhagavatam is very thorough as well. You know, every point is covered carefully at every stage. I mean, you see Prabhupada's books, sometimes people say, well, Prabhupada's books are very repetitive. But in response to that, we'll say, we're very forgetful. You know, every few days, if you don't read and understand, you know, Prabhupada gives the full existential analysis, the material world's a waste of time, but you're not the body, you're a servant of Krishna. If we don't read that every few days, we start thinking, actually, maybe I'll try and enjoy it. We constantly need that reminders, because we're forgetful, that's the nature of the material energy. So that's the best answer I can give to that question. Also, if I guess they wanted to be thorough, you know, somebody just picked up the 10th canto and went straight there and suddenly, that's a dance, you know. At least the it's there as well, you know. Anything else? Krishna's bliss is, his bliss is ever increasing.
Yes.
He's not dependent on the devotees.
No.
But he likes them. He likes them. Yeah. Krishna's self satisfied.
Yes.
But to facilitate is ever increasing. Well, not even to facilitate, just to exchange the devotees. He likes to do that.
It's almost an inconceivable aspect that to the point where he understands his
Yeah, it's explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah. And the point I was making specifically is, you know, in this world our relationships, they tend to run dry, you know. You get to know somebody, you become familiar. You kind of, because it's a limited being. But Krishna, you know, he's constantly able to keep the nectar flowing. That's his specialty, ultimately.
He also mentioned in the conversation as with the gopis, I think in the previous chapter before, he says, as Lord Narayana, I'm not dependent, I'm not Maharaj. In the case of Krishna, in terms of being Swami Bhagavan, he is dependent. But Radharani really does control. It's not, the relationship is such that he becomes subservient to the devotee's will. So therefore, in the sense that he's Krishna, he needs, you know, Srimati Bhagavan in order to, and the other devotees in order to increase his bliss, the Tara's bliss increases. That's why in Chaitanya Charitamrita it says he's one, and then he separates eternally as two to enjoy, to increase his bliss.
Yeah, sometimes in Mayavada you say it's all one, but if it's all one you can't have any exchange. That's why devotees, you know, we're also part and parcel of Krishna, we're Krishna's energy. You could say in one sense we're God. But what is our, we're a particular manifestation of God, we're jiva, manifestation of God's energy. So we exist for relating that ultimately to Krishna. Is that right? Anything else? Any last question or point? Comment? Thank you very much, everyone. Hare Krishna. Gantraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.